afternoon. Today is Friday, December the 13th, 347th day of the new year. Friday the 13th. Has it been weird at the firehouse?
No, normal day.
Very cool. Very cool. So maybe we break the string.
I hope so.
Yeah, we'll know by the end of tonight.
Yeah,
won't we?
We'll see.
Joining us this afternoon from Humble Bay Fire is Chris Edmonds. Hey, guy.
How you doing?
Good. Geez, you even prepared for this show. That's far more than what that other guy does.
Don't tell him, though.
I think I just did.
Okay.
I think so. Is he in town and just deciding not to show up?
No, I think he had a prior commitment out of town, actually.
Oh. So I'll have to listen to this on the internet, then.
Mm-hmm.
Good. And we know he will. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the activities that have been going on in the area, and haven't there been an awful lot of them?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like an old drumbeat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just over and over. Yeah. We just got to bring that plateau of steadiness down a little bit. And we'll also get some tips from Chris about some of the things, the do's and don'ts of the holiday season. We'll do that when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chris Edmonds. Sorry, I almost didn't give you a name reference. The guy from the fire department. But before we do, I have got Shakespeare, and I have got George Bernard Shaw. Your choice.
Let's go with the Shakespeare.
All right. The winning quote is, quote, "I wasted time, and now doth time waste me." Yeah, I like those aging quotes right around the holidays, too. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Sorry about that. Luck of the draw, right?
Yeah. rock, paper, scissors, huh? Oh, boy, you guys, it seems like you've been halfway busy the last little bit. I haven't since there's a lot of ambulance runs, but maybe they're not happening at nighttime. Maybe those are daytime events these days.
The medical aspect of it's been staying about the same, but the fire activity's definitely picked up the last few weeks.
Just seasonal stuff?
Related to cold weather. A couple of different causes were related to combustibles too close to heaters. We had some ashes that were removed from a fireplace and put in a not-so-non-combustible container and stored in a garage that led to a fire.
Now, isn't that almost the prototypical don't be stupid? Unless it was next to the gas can for the lawnmower.
Right, right.
Then that would have been the coup de grace.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not uncommon. We see it, you know, every year a couple of times. You know, when it gets cold, people clean out their fireplace after using it, and they think that the ashes are cool. But they're not. I mean, they may
stay warm. I think a good test would be if you put it outside and there was still steam.
Proper way to do it would be put it in a metal container with a lid on it. And what I personally do is stick it out back and wet it down.
Oh, you'll hose it down too?
Mm-hmm,
but then what do you do with all that
junk? Paranoid. I'm paranoid about
it. Well, it would be a professional embarrassment, obviously.
For sure.
But what do you do with the when you're done?
If you put it in a metal container and set it outside away from non-combustible materials, right, you'll be good.
No, okay, now you've done that.
Mm-hmm.
It's been drained.
Mm-hmm.
And you got that gray.
I spread it over my lawn.
Oh, you'll use it as a mulcher?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's just me personally.
I mean, that's just like, kind of like ugly, nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not in the garden, though.
Mm-hmm.
Good move. So people just kind of being lazy, Chris, about not thinking of the what ifs?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of being lazy. It's just sometimes people don't think about it in the terms that we do from the fire service. They get a routine established. Maybe 99 out of 100 times, nothing happens. It's that one time that, you know, the fire or the embers that are left, ashes that are left, don't cool down enough.
This, I know, is a goofy question, but how many does it take?
How many
embers? How much energy? How much? I mean, to catch something on fire, if you got a, let's say a cubic square foot of ash.
You're going to make me go into physics and math?
Well, I'm just wondering, if it's not glowing, if it's not making any noise, if we kind of like put our hand in it and it's not hot enough to do anything.
Well,
okay, that kind of passes all the normal regular guy test, and yet it'll still catch fire.
Sure, but the one thing I wouldn't recommend is sticking a bare hand into a pile of ashes to see if it's still hot.
Well, let's say you stir it around with your garden shovel,
right,
and you're not feeling any heat.
Right, then you're safe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Safe enough for the garage?
I would still put it out.
So. Yeah.
But that's because I'm paranoid about it.
Yeah. And people know you know where you live. Okay. Are there any other combustible things? I mean, we'll hear like mulch piles
mm-hmm.
every once in a while catch fire. Mm-hmm. And you see log decks and the sprinklers sprinkling on top of it. What is this thing that causes these items to go whoosh?
It's
when you don't think about it.
Well, let's use a mulch pile, for instance. Typically not this time of year that we're going to see it, but if the conditions are right, when grass clippings start to decay, when they deteriorate, they generate heat. The decaying causes heat. So if the winds are right, the humidity's right, it can actually start burning.
So like a haystack?
Mm-hmm.
In theory, could.
Exactly.
And this isn't spontaneous combustion. This is...
It's basically generating its... Yeah, it is. It's generating its own heat inside. It's not spontaneous human combustion, which some people say.
That's a whole different... Have you ever had to deal with one of those?
No.
Or anybody who thinks that was happening?
There are people out there that believe it happens, and I've never seen it scientifically proven.
They don't probably drill you guys on that at the fire academy, do they?
The only time it comes up is when someone says, this is what happened, we'll do the scientific test to show that that's not what caused it. It was, it's caused by something else.
Oh, I see. They'll lob that out there as a possible explanation.
Sure. Yeah. I've heard it. I've actually heard it in suggestions from fires we've been at.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You don't laugh uproariously in front of them, do you?
No.
You wait for them to leave the room?
Well, typically when we're doing that, it usually involves an injury or a fatality. So, no, obviously we don't. It's a serious thing. But it's been thrown out there.
It's on the table for some folks. Isn't that interesting? I thought it was just all science fiction stuff.
Well, it is.
Oh! Now it comes out and makes a firm stand.
It is science fiction, but...
Thank you.
It is thrown out there.
So you haven't had to deal with one of those in the last week or two?
No.
No news story there.
No.
Okay. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19. Yeah, I told you it was going to be a weird show. We'll be back with more from Chris Edmonds.
Now I'm going to Sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with 6 treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late Spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 423-323. They're big numbers. I should be able to tell this. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Battalion Chief from Humboldt Bay Fire, Chris Edmonds. Chris, some of the different challenges that are out there, the medical aids, okay. The fires, I mean, that's kind of like your bread and butter,
mm-hmm.
those types of things. But you had a couple weird ones, too. The bodies in the bay?
Sure.
Hey, that's probably something that's a little different.
That's, yeah.
What's your involvement in something like that?
Well, we have guys that are trained as rescue swimmers. Obviously, we want to find out if it's a rescue or a recovery, but we can make entry, but we also work with other agencies such as Sheriff's Department, Coast Guard, and the Harbor District for that matter. I mean, that's call them for boats and we'll utilize their tools.
So with the one, was it last week?
I believe so.
Were you guys bystanders? Did you get into the water? Not you personally, but right, the department right. get into the water?
I'm not real familiar with the incident, but I believe we responded down to it. And once the, I think there were bystanders that actually got a hold of the patient and transferred him to us on shore.
So others had gotten in.
I believe so. We hadn't deployed our swimmers at that point. There was already, might have been from the oyster company they actually grabbed.
Oh, Greg and the guys?
Yeah, I think so.
When you're looking for something like that, I can't imagine you guys travel with fins and aqualungs on board all trucks.
We have certain people that are swimmers. They're trained in the department, and they do carry that equipment, not necessarily tanks, because they're surface swimmers as opposed to divers.
So they won't go. Okay.
Correct. But they do.
The divers are they the coasties?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who the divers are. We are basically without air tanks, but we have dry suits, fins, and they'll use a surfboard or throw a flotation device or swim out and make a rescue and drag them back.
Yeah, probably don't want to throw the surfboard.
Yeah, right.
Basic. So if there's a flood or somebody gets in a creek, that's the kind of stuff that you're looking for, a car in a swollen creek, and then somebody...
It's actually up to the swimmers to make the determination if they can make a safe entry or not. They're trained to, first triage the scene, and then the go or no-go aspect of it is up to the swimmer.
Vehicle inside the bay. I know that sounds weird, but we go back years, and there have been those where either the brakes didn't work.
Right.
Or the breaker didn't work.
Correct.
And just got off into the bay. Uh-huh. In that kind of scenario, anybody who's around gets first shot at it? Is there a prioritization on something like that when you've got a live person?
As far as people going into the water?
Yeah, in a car that's now filling up with water or is already gone under?
Well, I mean, I would hope that Joe Citizen on the bank would also think about how cold the water is here, and they can complicate the issue.
You're not going to get Papside leaping off the dock,
exactly.
I'll tell you. Yeah.
We have had people that have been successful in making rescues before we got there, and I commend them for that. However,
Pre-cell phone. Okay.
However, if they go in there and they become hypothermic, now it's compounded the issue for us, and now we've got multiple rescues.
Or if you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
How do you train for that?
Our rescue swimmers, they've been going through a program. It's a nationally recognized program. And I honestly don't know all of the stuff that's going on with it, but there are certain standards they have to meet before they get certified and start making entries.
So you're more of a bobber like me?
I am more of a stand on the bank. And
oh, I see. You don't even get wet.
Logistically support them.
Oh, I see. That would mean the cheerleader outfit?
Right. These guys are they're specialized. They're very specialized in what they can do.
I would imagine they'd almost have to. How many do you have?
I believe we're up to 12 now.
Oh, really? Yeah. So even if it's just luck of the draw, you got pretty good odds that somebody's going to know what they're doing.
We have swimmers on every day, but they may be on different apparatus at different stations. So if we get a call for a water rescue, that engine or truck may need to go to a different area than what it's normally in.
So you may run Pine Hill to the north end of the bay,
exactly,
so to speak.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Are there other training processes that you guys go through that are out of the norm?
Hazardous materials. We have.
I've always wondered, how do you practice that one? It's like being in the chemistry lab and learning how to deal with a chemical fire,
right?
Without having the fire.
Right. It's actually 6 weeks. I believe it's 6 weeks or several weeks of training that they go to out of the area, and it's chemistry. It's incident command, and then it's the tactics that they are trained on, how to deal with it, what the equipment they have, and make entry and rescues. And
so a lot of it is fire normal with a little bit of twist thrown in for good measure.
Right, and then we have our technical rescue personnel, our USAR, the Urban Search and Rescue Team, Humboldt Urban Search and Rescue Team. They receive additional training, so they're there for the earthquake, the high angle rescues, the events over the bank type of a thing.
Which has always been kind of a weird one also. Mm-hmm. But, without a helicopter. I get the helicopter thing. Bring the bed in. Okay, we'll load them into the bed and we'll fly away. dragging them up the hillside. Mm-hmm. You know, particularly somebody your my size.
Right.
Yeah, bring it on, buddy. Better bring your friend, too.
Well, that's where they learn all about pulleys and mechanical advantages and using ropes and things like that.
Yeah, what was the last time that they were deployed?
For an actual rescue, I don't know the last time. I know they're training constantly, though. There's always, because it's again, it's specialized, so they're always doing quarterly drills, monthly drills.
Well, we got enough folks in the area that like to do the rappelling off the cliffs mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. I would imagine the numbers, you know, you have that opportunity.
We're fortunate to have that around here, where people can go climb rocks, go up on the hills, you know. So let's take those skills and apply them to emergency services.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Chris Edmonds.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Battalion Chief for Humboldt Bay Fire, Chris Edmonds. Chris, some of the different activities that are going on, are you guys seeing a lot more drug-related activities also? I mean, we seem to feel in intrinsically that we're seeing it on the street.
Sure.
Talk to Andy and the guys at EPD. Yeah, they're... Mike with the county, I mean, everybody kind of seems like they're dealing with it. But you guys, as one of the leads on medical responses,
right.
I think you'd be up to your alligators in this stuff.
Well, what I compare it to is when I started, you know, back in the early 90s, I've seen an increase. I mean, we go to more drug-related medical aids now, drug-related or alcohol-related accidents, it seems. You know, and quite frankly, we've had a number of drug-related fires, you know, such as hash production.
Oh, yeah, the exploding houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the old days, isn't it, when they used to mix this garbage in the bathtubs and then you'd have to deal with it that way?
Well, I never saw that stuff. But
oh, really? Yeah. Oh, and the kids having, you know.
Right.
I remember this must have been when McFarland and Ehler were the regular guys out here.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about, you know, and there would be kids using the same bathtub to bathe in.
Okay.
I mean, just, whether it was ignorance or stupidity or both.
Right. Well, a lot of times kids can't choose what their environment is. So.
Yeah. Well, so how do you guys respond to that? If you pull up into a scene, it's a medical aid, and you've got that kind of stuff, and there are little ones running around.
Right.
Do you kind of corral them a little bit
and
keep them aside?
We're trained as mandated reporters. We're expected to report things. If we see conditions that are dangerous for kids, and we file reports on that. But yeah, when we're there, if there's something that's immediately dangerous to a child or anyone for that matter, I mean, we're going to make contact to the appropriate resources and get them coming. But yeah, we're not going to let something happen to a kid if it's dangerous, and we're not going to say, okay, it's not our job. It is our job to protect them. That's what we're there for. We're all on the same team.
With some of the weather stuff that's going on now, are you starting to see signs either in homes or outside homes? Frostbite and hypothermia and some of those different things that sometimes accompany cold snaps?
I haven't seen any frostbite around here, per se, like here on the coast, but it doesn't mean it's not happening up inland where it was getting down into the teens. As far as hypothermia, yeah, I think I heard a call last week where they were going out on someone who had been out all night long and was hypothermic.
What does that look like or feel like, or what's the process?
Well, disoriented, for one. I mean, their mental capacity. When someone, for instance, I'm just throwing an example out there. If someone says they're hot and it's 20 degrees outside, and they're wearing a t-shirt and shorts, that would be unusual behavior, which, you know, those are the kind of things that can happen when someone becomes disoriented or altered level of consciousness from hypothermia.
Unless you're from North Dakota.
Right.
Yeah, then you might actually be hot. Yeah.
Yeah, they say 32 degrees, the flip-flops come out.
Yeah, above, not below. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the body then starts to react differently?
What's happening is the blood is not getting to the brain the way it should be, you know, so their level of consciousness changes.
But they're still coherent, still mobile?
Well, it depends on what you call coherent. They may be able
to communicate.
They may be able to communicate, but they're not making good choices.
Well, geez, I can think of so many. Even in the middle of the summer, they would qualify for that one.
Well, then you've got the other extreme as far as heat exhaustion.
No, I was saying, I just hang around with goofy people.
Uh-huh.
So in that kind of a situation, are you looking for overt, unique activity or interaction, or a change in the personality?
Yes.
So well, the two together have to...
Well, yeah, okay. It's... I mean, I just threw out a couple of aspects of it, but we're doing a full assessment of a patient whenever we contact them, you know, physical assessment, mental status, you know, their vitals, what's going on, what's the history of the patient, what caused this. You know, if somebody says, yeah, this is somebody that hasn't had anything to eat or drink, or is it they've been out all night in the cold? Is it, yeah, there's drugs involved or alcohol involved? Those are the things we have to, it's basically an investigation of what's causing the problem with the person.
If alcohol is being used in that kind of a scenario, does that compound
the
situation?
I
presume you went to college. I went to college. We both probably were outdoors during football games when it was a little chilly, and the bottle of schnapps is always designed just right to be able to...
It can. It can come.
So what does a pop of schnapps do? Just kind of, I mean, makes you, quote unquote, feel a little warmer inside. What is that?
Well, that's a response to the chemistry of the alcohol in the body. Someone like your size or my size, you're a little bit bigger than me, but somebody your size or my size might be able to take a little bit more, but it doesn't mean it's not having an impact on you both physically and mentally as well.
Right, but that feeling or sensation of warming up, is that...
It may not be warming you up.
That's just some kind of sensation.
It's going to have an impact on your blood pressure, what your blood's doing, your mental status. Alcohol is a depressant. I mean, it may slow your respiration, so maybe you're not getting enough oxygen. You know, I'm not saying that doing one beer or one cocktail is going to do something like that, but it can have an impact on people.
And those are the types of things you're looking for if somebody is showing signs of hypothermia, if alcohol has been involved.
We want to know, yeah.
Do drugs react? I mean, say somebody's loaded with marijuana. I mean, is that going to do anything, or?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I would think that it would have an impact, but I honestly don't know the answer to that. We'd have to ask a doctor.
Yeah, well, there's not one around, so okay. This is why Ken stepped away from the mic this week. He knew this was coming up. KINS, News and Information Times 342. Yeah, sure. We'll be back with more from Chris Edmonds.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chris Emmons from Hubble Bay Fire. Chris, holiday safety, certainly, I mean, there's not a good time for a fire. There's not a bad time for a fire. There just are fires, I think. When you look at the next couple of weeks, we've got folks getting together, maybe the fireplaces continue being used. Certainly, we've got a lot of flammables around, whether it's the tree, the wrapping, the boxes, the goodies, whatever it may happen to be. What makes you hold your breath the most?
Well, the thing that gets to me the most is when people disable smoke alarms. One, smoke alarms are the cheapest insurance policy you can have. They're the notification to get you out of the house. Historically, you look at the stats and fires start to increase around the end of October through January, and then they start to decrease. That's kind of the national trend, and actually fits with us on our trend as well here locally. Typically, it's the cooking fires and the heating fires are the causes.
Or the attempted cooking?
Correct.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, cooking, people leave stoves unattended, whatever they're cooking. We've got turkey fryers out there. You know, that's we've had a increase in fires caused by turkey fryers, of all things, you know, because they overflows.
This year?
I haven't looked at the stats for this year, but yeah, nationally it has increased.
I would think that it could be nothing worse than responding to a holiday event when there's a fryer accident.
Sure.
Any holiday. Everybody's around, and those are not clean.
Right.
Issues.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Any event during the holidays is kind of a downer. So whether it's a medical event or a fire event or broken water line, for that matter, it puts a damper on everybody's holiday season.
Have there been that many frozen pipes?
Well, I've had a few. There were a few. We had that deep freeze earlier this week, actually, and we had a number of broken lines.
Somehow that not to denigrate it, but it kind of sounds refreshing a little bit that, you know, we actually have more than just wet and less wet seasons.
Right.
You know, we actually have a third season this year.
Yeah.
When there's the ice out, mm-hmm. and you guys see that there's the ice, if the trucks are rolling, do you have any concerns? Or because the weight of those rigs are so much that you're not, even if you hit a patch of ice, it's not going to take you for a ride?
Oh, no, we're always concerned. I mean, every day we issue what our plan of the day and deployment is for the day, and on that it has the weather briefing as part of it, so all the crews get to see that. And then they do a conference call with each one of the stations, and every one of the shift battalion chiefs will say, hey, it's raining out there, it's slick out there, be careful. You know, we all want to go home, and we all want to make sure we're doing a good job and not compounding the issue ourselves.
So even the big boys will be affected with hydroplaning. Absolutely. And things of that nature.
Sure.
Now, that there's not a lot that would terrify me. I think if I was in front of you and saw one of the fire trucks start to hydroplane, mm-hmm. that could be on the list. I mean, there's not a heck of a lot you can do. You can't outrun it because it's so big. Mm-hmm. Surviving it, how much weight are you carrying when you run?
Well, think about it. A 3,000-pound car or 4,000-pound car versus a 40,000-pound fire engine or a 70,000-pound truck. That could be out of control.
Yeah.
So we actually, our distances to stop or, you know, react are much greater than what a smaller vehicle would be. So that's always when we do our training, we're thinking of that it's going to take longer to stop. So we reduce our speeds.
In allowance for that.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best Christmas gift on your list this year?
Getting to spend time with the family.
Okay.
That's actually the best thing for me, because many years I was on shift. So this year, this is one of the years I get to be home with them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. How much that cost you?
Going into prevention.
Oh. I see. You don't have to bring a turkey dinner down or anything like that. But now that I've introduced the idea, it might be a nice thing to do for the other five.
Sure.
Just leave that one out there on the table for you. Thanks for coming by.
All right. Thank you.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Chris Emmons. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day, hug somebody else, see you tomorrow morning.